Welcome to the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast, where we learn from real estate professionals across the industry. They will share about how they got into real estate, the big wins they have celebrated, the mistakes they have made along the way, and the advice they have for anyone following in their footsteps. Money really does grow on trees.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I've got Trevor here today. Hey, Trevor. So he goes by his middle name, and I do the same. I'm Thomas William. I go by William. I'll go ahead and let him introduce himself, and we'll go ahead and begin this episode.
Hi, so it's an honor to be here. I'm very excited. I'm originally from Niagara Falls, Canada. Spent most of my life in the attractions and entertainment industry. So 5 years with Ripley's, believe it or not, 18 years with Guinness World Records. Then I moved to the U.S. and I started working for iFly Indoor Skydiving. And I did 20 years with that company, started with the original owner. And quite fascinating, on the very first team meeting, he gave everybody a copy of Rich Dad Poor Dad. Pretty interesting. And then I really didn't do much about it. Sort of did my career, kept going on. And then we did get bought out by, by a private equity company. And that's when I started passively investing. And now I do real estate full time.
That's awesome. Okay. So, man, you talked on three different job careers that were pretty fun. Tell us about the skydiving. So have you skydived before?
Yeah, so I did. So I started working with iFly, and most of the team that worked for me were skydivers. And so I decided I should try it, and I wasn't very good at it. So I actually jumped 12 times and crashed 11 of them. One of them, I did 6 weeks on crutches, 3 months with a cane. So I still have, when it rains, my left ankle still hurts. So it wasn't a sport for me. But the indoor park skydiving is very safe, very fun. And it was an amazing career. And near the end, I got to travel all over the world. So open Brisbane, Australia, Perth, Melbourne, Queenstown, New Zealand, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Calgary, Canada. So it was a very exciting journey for sure.
That's super cool. Yeah. I love to travel and definitely want to go to Australia and New Zealand both someday. I got to skydive as well.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, they're amazing places. And it was such a rewarding career.
That's really cool. So when I skydived, I actually had like really long hair and it like came back in a point straight back when I got done. It was pretty funny. I think there's a picture somewhere of that.
That's funny.
And you also said you worked for Guinness Book of World Records.
What
were you doing for them?
Yeah, so 18 years, I ran a franchise location in Niagara Falls, Canada. Ran a company-owned location in the Empire State Building in New York City, and then opened up a franchise in Los Angeles on Hollywood Boulevard. So pretty exciting. And then once I stopped working with them, I did some consulting. And for the same folks that opened the Guinness in Hollywood, I opened up a Hollywood Wax Museum in Branson, Missouri for them. And so I've had a very unique career for sure.
That's cool. Do you have any favorite world records, or do you have any?
I don't have any world records, and I don't know what my favorite would be. The world's tallest lady used to work for me, so that was pretty unique, and I got to travel with her as well. So we went over to Japan twice and appeared on television, and Venezuela, Puerto Rico, went out to LA for talk shows a couple of times. So that was definitely interesting, and she was very big, obviously, 7'7". She had a real hard time getting around, and we had a custom cane made for her, and she would put her hand on my shoulder. And when I would come back, I would have this massive handprint bruise because she would lean on me and my shoulder would get bruised. You could see her fingers coming down the front. Her life was challenging being that tall. But who else can say they did some crazy things like that? Had lunch with Michael Jackson. We gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award. And we all went to lunch with the founder of Guinness World of Records as well. So it was pretty cool.
That is, man. Yeah, I would love to just visit with you for a while and just hear some of the stories that you have.
I know. There's this guy, Jim Bakes from the GOV Network. He calls me the most interesting man in the world because I've definitely had very, very unique things in my life. I've been very blessed.
Yes, sir. That's really cool. Well, hey, so let's talk a little bit more about real estate. I understand, like you said, you got the Rich Dad Poor Dad book, and I think that's how most people, including myself, that was really the diving board starting point. So tell us a little bit more about why you got into passive investing.
Yeah, so of course I got that book and I did what so many people did. Wow, this could be life-changing, and I didn't let it change my life for way too long. I kept doing my career. That's what I thought I needed to do, and I just didn't understand this concept of passive income, right? It always felt like I was going to deal with the toilets, tenants, and trash, and I just, I thought, man, I get ripped off when I get my house fixed. Why do I want to make that a job? And so for a long time I didn't understand it, and then I started learning a little bit, and to be honest, I got interested in office and retail first, but then just didn't get excited about it as much. And I started going to those weekend seminars, where pay $50,000 and we'll tell you how to buy an office building with a credit card, and I was like, it doesn't quite sound right. And then I did join a local mentorship program. They're more focused on single family, but they did have some commercial, and I started educating myself. And then once I started educating myself, then all of a sudden the big ha-ha moment came along that there is a way to earn money, there is a way to get some of the tax advantages and other things and not do the work. So I started very quickly started passively investing, and then just kept doing that, and kept moving my money over out of the stock market into multifamily, all different types of asset classes, but really started out with multifamily, and that's where I focus because I understand it the most, and it also has a great appeal to me because everybody does need a place to live, and this concept of
Exactly.
buying a place to live, making it a better place to live for the residents and earning money, it kind of like seems like the trifecta of win-win-win, where you can get all of the benefits.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm right there with you. It's like I can help investors, I can help partners, I can help my family through investing in real estate. But like you're saying, like you can impact communities and impact people. And I care so much about people, so
Yeah, it's
that's
very
something I want to do.
interesting. I just never got that before. I never understood it. And once I understood it, it was like the light bulbs came on, and I'm like, now I'm on a mission just as you are to share that with as many people as possible, which is why I always like, as soon as I can get on a podcast, I love to, because I love to talk about it. Because I didn't start till I was in my 50s, and I wish so much if I had started at your age, life would be completely different right now. Completely different.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm 26 years old.
Yeah, that's
Pretty
awesome.
excited. So you talked a little bit about multifamily and office retail. So I know you have several asset classes that you have invested in. Tell us a little bit about more about the asset classes, and then maybe which ones you like the most and.
So I started out with multifamily, just because that one was the easiest to understand and to do different things. And then I decided I needed to diversify a little bit. So everybody talks about diversification. So my diversification was to try some different asset classes. Although I will admit my timing wasn't always perfect. So my first retail strip center I invested in closed on March 15th, 2020. Well, then you can guess what happened, right? They all
Oh
got shut down. And luckily, Texas, they got opened back up quickly,
man.
and that one's turned out to be, it could have been devastating, right? I'll be honest, all through COVID, every time there was a meeting called, I thought, oh, they're going to do a cash call. What's going on? And they never did, and they managed to get it, and they managed to pay 5% cash on cash, which isn't exciting, but considering what I thought I was getting into, I was super happy. And then during COVID, I also switched and I invested in a medical center, a small sort of, in Mesquite, Texas, a smaller one. And it was just, I wanted to learn a little bit about that asset class. I've done a couple of land deals where, basically the first phase of the land where it's the most risky, but also the most rewarding, where you buy the land, you try to get the entitlements, you confirmed what you can put on the land. And both of those investments, one's still active, hasn't converted yet, but those are really good. And then my first apartment investments were deep value add. And I didn't quite understand exactly what I was investing in, I'm going to be honest. And they were a little bit too deep value add. And then when COVID came, it really, really hurt them. So both of my first two investments, they managed to get out and just break even. We didn't lose any money. You know, but it was a really good lesson. And you know, there are cycles in real estate. There are things you got to be careful for. And it really helped me, you know, think a little bit more out of the box. The next one I did was a very unique one. It was here in Austin, and it was converting apartments to condominiums. It's a big thing here to get condominiums downtown. And so they took this underperforming apartment asset. It was 28 doors. It wasn't a big one. And they were converting them to condominiums. And it started off going great. And then this crazy thing called COVID came along. So now you've got an underperforming apartment complex that doesn't cash flow, that you can't evict the tenants of because there's an eviction moratorium. Then you can finally evict the tenants, but you can't get a permit because the city's backlogged. And then you can finally get a permit and materials are backlogged because of the supply chain issues. Luckily, with the crazy real estate market here in Austin, you know, they sold the first few for like $285,000 and sold the last few for like $450,000. And the project was saved. We did well. And that's the beauty of real estate appreciation. That project is now closed out, and they got the return that was promised. And then I did a storage investment, and the jury's still out on that one because it's a new build. So they haven't built it yet. They're still building it now. And it's just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And that was partly to, you know, I wanted to invest something in the Carolinas, but multifamily prices are pretty, even though Texas is high, they're even higher there. So I decided to try a storage investment. And then I do have my big win, you know, so we talked about the first two that made no money. Luckily, I took a gamble on Tucson, Arizona. And anybody who's been following real estate knows that Tucson, Phoenix, especially Tucson, Phoenix exploded. And then Tucson kind of exploded as a secondary market to Phoenix. And I invested my money there and 3x'd my money in 20 months. So that's a big win. So I'm very excited about that one. And in fact, reinvested some of that money with the same person on their current deal they have.
That's incredible. Yeah. Thank you for talking about your biggest win and a few of the setbacks, you know, so especially with the setbacks, you know, how can you learn from those and try to steer away?
Yeah. So I definitely learned you've got to really know your sponsor. You've got to really get to know them, you know, and how they are. And what had happened was, is they had a couple of pretty good wins and I knew a little bit about them. And I think that they just got a little, they bought and they, two things they didn't calculate correctly, the future property taxes and insurance. And both things in Texas they catch up to you very quickly. And when you miscalculate those, and then the goal was to stabilize and refinance, and they weren't able to stabilize and refinance. So now you're in this really tough spot where you're, you know, you're basically fighting just to stay alive, but you're not able to focus on executing your plan. And so that was very unfortunate. So I've learned a lot about that. And I look at, you know, what I look at a lot more things like what's their insurance? What are they doing for property taxes? Are their rent bumps realistic? You know, they put rent bumps in it. And then once I started to dig into it more, I started saying, well, the people that live in this neighborhood can't afford that rent. And, you know, so now simple sort of math calculation, you know, what's the average income in that within the 3 mile radius? And can they afford the rent bumps that the syndicator is talking about getting? And so those are some things that are fairly simple to check through, but they're very important because those things are, that's critical, right? That's the whole name of this game is to improve an apartment and increase the rents. And you can increase them past the economy. You know, you just, people can't pay more than they can pay. You know, it's not like wages are keeping up with this crazy inflation.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, so I've heard of the rule of thirds. Yeah. And, you know, the concept that with the median income in the area, you know, you only allot a third of the median income to pay for rent. And I think that's a pretty safe bet for
it is. And it's super making simple. Determinations. And you can Google it pretty easy. You know, there's several websites, CityData and other ones that you can get this information from. And, you know, sometimes if you're on the edge of where incomes switch around, because certain markets, you know, the income changes dramatically across the street. you know, or across the highway. It's really quite fascinating if you actually spend a little bit of time. I mean, you can be this side of the highway, you know, and incomes are 38,000, and that side of the highway, they're 52,000. And it's significant, and it's quite prevalent in a lot of developing cities that, you know, this is just a nicer, newer neighborhood, and this is the let's call it the wrong side of the tracks. And so you want to be on the right side of the tracks so you can improve that value and get it. And it's the nice thing is it's not too hard to figure it out. So a typical investor with a little bit of education can at least check the reality of a plan. But the get-go at the very beginning is who you're giving your money to, right? That's the most important thing. Get to know them. You know, these people that post all these big, beautiful things they're doing on the internet, well, find out more information, right? You know, there's a couple of them that posted, man, we 3X'd our employees. And then you dig a little deeper and they've got another property that, like, they're in court with, you know, violations of health code issues. And, you know, is that who you want to give your money to? Okay. You know, just a little bit of diligence, you can find out a lot. So don't believe all the internet hype. We all look great on the internet, even I do.
Passive investors in real estate are able to receive a check every month. Some people call that mailbox money. We say money really does grow on trees. Visit the website at biggerpictureholdings.com, where we have a ton of free resources to help you learn more about planting your very own money tree.
So you've done a lot of passive investing, and now you're transitioning into to being more of a general partner.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit more about those two deals.
Yeah, so it was really, really hard to switch to it. I'm not going to lie. It was super hard to find a deal that made sense. It was super hard to find a deal that I was a good fit on. You know, there were lots of deals I was offered to be part of, but I didn't really know the sponsorship team well. And I thought, I'm going to really stick to my principles. The first time I'm going to take somebody else's money and put it into a deal, you know, I can blow it on my first one, and I definitely don't want to do that. And it's not even blow it. I want to really make sure that I take care of my investors' money. And so I joined a deal, and it was a really, really good deal. Unfortunately, it was a loan assumption, which is really, really challenging. We had a third party pref equity piece in it, and then we had investor money. And after 6 months of working nonstop on this thing, we couldn't get approved for the loan. And, you know, this is the stuff nobody tells you about. You know, you go to these seminars with the gurus and they tell you, buy an apartment complex, you hire a property manager and you go sit on the beach and drink pina coladas and the checks roll. And it's not exactly true like that. And so we ended up losing $350,000, 75 of which is mine, which is significant. You know, it's a lot of money. I want to stress here that no investors lost their money. They were 100% made whole. That is the risk of the general partner side of the deal. But, you know, and again, I look at it as I just paid for an education. You know, I didn't go to college, so I went to the School of Hard Knocks and I did this deal. And it's very challenging. And then I was rolling out of that deal and a deal popped up in Columbia, South Carolina. And I managed to move my investors over to that deal. Very small part of it, but managed to get connected in with a pretty good group that I'm hoping to do a couple of more deals.
Wonderful.
I'm working on one that we think is a really good deal. I found off market in San Antonio. I can't say too much because it's a 506B, so
right,
I can't
right.
list it. But and by the time this airs, it will probably be closed anyways. So that's super exciting. And, you know, that I hope will launch me into the next. And I always want to stay passively invested. Very
Definitely.
Important for me to be balanced out. So, and people say, well, why are you switching to active? And to be honest, there's two reasons. I still need some of the active income. I still need the active tax advantages. So as an active investor, you get bigger tax advantages than you do as a passive investor. And I still want to do something. You know, I'm not old
right.
enough yet to sit on the, and I don't even like pina coladas and I don't really like beaches. I like to look at the ocean, but I don't really like sand. It's kind of silly, isn't it? Yeah. So, and switching over to active, you know, it's the next level of responsibility though, right? But I've now all of a sudden become passionate about it, you know, and I've actually set this hairy, audacious goal to help 1,000 people. I originally was going to do 100. And then I thought, let me Grant Cardone it and 10X it. You know, so I said, I'm going to help 1,000 people reach financial independence through real estate investing. And as a passive investor, it clearly happens, right? You clearly can. And especially if you start as early as you start, you know, this compound effect of your money. You know, I started later, so it doesn't grow as exponentially. But when you start young, if you think about it, you know, doubling your money that you have invested every 5 years, you know, if you take $100,000 and turn that to two, turn it to four, turn it to eight, turn it to 1.6 million, turn it to 3.2 million. I mean, think about that, right? You started out with $100,000 and you have $3.2 million. And that's simply just reinvesting all your proceeds and having deals that 5X or doubled every 5 years. It's significant. It really is. And so because I started a bit late, I've got to keep doing a little bit active on the active side. Plus, I love it. I miss running and opening businesses. I got let go with COVID like many people did. And I decided that this was going to be my new passion to be able to, you know, buy communities that are poorly managed, manage them correctly, make them a better place to live, and then get returns for our investors.
I love that. Yeah, that's really cool. So real estate truly has begun to change your life. Would you say?
Yeah, it definitely has changed my life. And it was quite interesting. I did not think that I would get this passionate about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought, okay, this is just going to be something I'm going to do when I get older and it'll be whatever. But it's completely like, so the passion of you know, if I can get a place that improve the quality of living for people to live, then I can have a place where people really enjoy working at. And they feel fulfilled that we care about the tenants and we want to do more than just take their rent. So the workers there feel fulfilled. Then if we do those two things, the people that invest their money are going to get good returns and they're going to be able to go do their passion within their life. It's just kind of like this, wow, amazing cycle. And you know, I'm just like, this is incredible that I can achieve all these things and change three groups of people's lives.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And, you know, I can honestly say I'm very passionate about real estate these days. And, you know, I'm airing this podcast and, you know, I post on LinkedIn every single day. So I've been doing that for over a month. You know, I'm talking to people in Canada. I'm talking to people in Africa. Like, I'm talking to people literally like all over the world now. And, you know, I have to be careful because I'll talk about real estate all the time with my friends and family, just because it's so fascinating. You know, there's so many aspects to it. There's, you know, I studied engineering, so there's like the analytical side with the underwriting, and there's the networking with the brokers, and then there's the helping the people, you know, whether it's the investors or residents or whoever that is. Like, it's just an amazing thing.
It's I had no idea that I could touch so many lives.
Yes, sir. That's so awesome. Well, I really definitely appreciate having you on today.
No, it's my pleasure.
It's been fun to get to know you a little bit better. And it was also cool to hear your background and, you know, some of the really cool places and people that you've got to meet.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a blessed life. I can't, you know, can't deny that I've been able to do so many unique things that a lot of people don't get to do. And that is super rewarding to be able to do those kind of things.
Definitely. I guess in closing, you talked about some of the risks that you have as a general partner, as an active investor. So let's kind of compare and contrast that in closing with the passive investors.
Yeah. So I always like to use this example that passive investors are like passengers on an airliner. Okay, so somebody owns the airplane, somebody pays a pilot, somebody pays the steward and stewardesses, the mechanics, all of the different things. So they do all of the work. You buy a ticket on the plane. So this is the same as you buy a slot and an investment in a thing. And these people take care of everything. And on your journey, you can choose to do whatever you want. You can continue to work while you're on the plane. You can read a book. You can go to your coolest vacation destination. You can meet new, you can do whatever you want on your journey. And then when you get to your destination, then you have your choices of what you're going to do after you get there. And so I always look at it that this airplane is taking these people, and you can continue to work if you So a lot of people love their jobs. I talk to people that are passive investors, say, I'll never leave. And I never was going to leave my job. I think if the world didn't change and COVID didn't happen, I might be still doing it. And I think it's a bit of a blessing in disguise. We don't want to say the whole COVID pandemic was just to make my life better, but I'm going to take that step, you know. But it's, and you can choose to do whatever you want as a passenger. But you have no responsibilities, right? You just sit there in your bag, gets on the plane and get there. They serve you drinks while you're there, which are, you know, call it the updates. And then right. you get to your destination, which hopefully is financial independence. And the, but while you're doing it, you can do whatever you want within your life's journey.
That's cool. I really like that. I haven't heard that analogy yeah. before, but it's a really good comparison.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, and again, yes, real estate investing still does have risks, you know, still things can happen. But for most of the time, a real estate is always an appreciating asset. You know, so if you give your money to a really good operator, they're going to take an asset, they're going to improve its efficiency, its operation, and then time will always, almost always, all is the big word, real estate appreciates. It's just what it does.
Exactly. You know, so as us being on the plane, working on the plane, whether we're the flight attendant or the pilot, you know, there is a responsibility to take care of our investors.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like you expect your airline to be, to follow all the safety standards. I expect the people that I invest my money to follow all the safety standards. I want them to have it. You know, everybody says we do conservative underwriting, but I really want to truly see that that is the plan and that they projected a realistic return. And yes, returns are volatile, right? You get a little bit of losers, you get a little bit of winners. But, you know, I think on the whole, the fact that your money's always growing. And again, I've lost none of my money passively investing. You know, on the active side, there's a little bit, but it'll get caught up and be repaid to me.
Definitely. Yes, sir. Well, thank you so much, Trevor, for joining us today. Pleasure. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Like and subscribe below. A new episode will air every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Are you looking for more content? Visit our website, biggerpictureholdings.com. And remember, money really does grow on trees.